from somewhere deep below the earth. This is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie on Premier Radio Networks.
Well, sanctions will not stop the North Koreans from doing what they're doing, so let's find out what the Chinese may do. Will they help out? And if not, then where does this all lead us? What kind of a path are we going to go down? Back in a moment with our guest Charles Smith on Coast to Coast AM. What kind of cards, Charles, are the Chinese holding in this game?
China views North Korea, as well as Pakistan and other states they support, as proxies. The Chinese made an intentional decision in the 1990s to allow their proxy states, in particular North Korea and Pakistan, to develop nuclear weapons and encourage them to do so by providing engineering data, technical support, and in some cases, critical parts, blueprints, and plans. So basically, China views North Korea as a proxy state. They have made it very clear, for example, in recent public pronouncements coming from the official propaganda ministry, that they feel that an ancient Chinese empire once extended as far south as about the current truce line of the DMZ in the Korean Peninsula, which is sort of an indication that if Kim Jong-il should happen to fall, the Chinese might actually come across the border and either prop him up or take over.
Take over?
Oh, yeah, North Korea. The proclamation made by the official at the propaganda ministry was part of a multi-million dollar study showing that most of Korea was actually part of an ancient Chinese empire, and therefore, of course, according to their current policy of reunifying their ancient empires to bring forth a modern China, it only follows course that if it is threatened, like, say, Kim should suddenly find himself in a tenuous position and decide to blow town either for Switzerland or for downtown Beijing, the Chinese army is quite capable of walking across the border and reclaiming that ancient empire as now part of territorial China.
I would assume it could be done then without any shots being fired.
Probably not. I don't think the North Korean army would do much at all, if anything, to prevent such an action. Actually, the North Korean army and the People's Liberation Army work closely together. They stage frequent joint exercises. The Chinese provide them with extensive military equipment, logistical support. There is high-level as well as mid- and lower-level contacts. A good portion of the North Korean officer corps is trained in China. So for all practical purposes, the PLA and the DPRK forces could easily work together as a joint unit. Think of another recent example of... was provided to me saying that, you know, think of North Korea as Cuba was to the Soviet Union. It's a proxy state, and they're quite willing to pin us down, the United States, by utilizing these proxy states who are threatening war or terrorist events, and therefore dispersing our forces away from any main theater that the Chinese in Beijing feel that they would like to keep us out of. And again, I have to emphasize, Beijing made a clear and definite decision to proliferate nuclear weapons to their proxy states. We have made a clear decision to attempt to keep Japan, South Korea, Taiwan, and the other Asian states from developing and deploying nuclear weapons in a hope to stem an arms race. The Chinese, of course, don't feel that that's within their interests. So when we're talking about the North Korean bomb or the Pakistani bomb or potentially the Iranian bomb, the hand that moves behind this, that's rocking the atomic cradle, is in Beijing.
Now, let me ask you, though, Charles, what's better for us as a nation, the United States, to have North Korea where it is right now in its own form of government or to have it as part of China?
That's sort of like a devil's advocate, because as part of China, as we have witnessed quite distinctly with Hong Kong, with Macau, and the current Chinese attitude of return to the motherland, we may very well be looking at the expansion towards the ancient empire borders. Frankly, looking at North Korea as it is today, it's a basket case. It would be nice to have some form of change. Obviously, a Chinese military control might seem to be more stable on the surface. I doubt very much that the South Koreans would appreciate it very much, and the Japanese certainly wouldn't. This is a real problem that we're going to be facing, a growing threat, especially in Beijing. Keep in mind their intention to reunify lost cultures back to the motherland.
But, you know, Charles, I keep saying that we are, you know, when you look at business and sales, you don't try to screw up your biggest customer. We are the Chinese biggest customer. I mean, without us in the picture, buying their goods and their services and everything else they provide, they wouldn't be doing nearly the kind of business around this planet that they do. Why screw around with us?
First and foremost, if you look at the statements coming out of the CMC, the Central Military Command, and the CCP, the Central Communist Party, you will see they make it very clear. The number one enemy of the motherland is the United States, and it is their policy to push us out of Asia completely and reunify the motherland. If this sounds like a familiar statement, all you have to do is think of a certain Austrian who rose to power in the 1930s. China has two courses in its future. It's either going to explode or implode. An implosion would be much like the fall of the Berlin Wall, and this eventual failure of the Soviet Union. The Chinese hierarchy is completely bound and determined never to allow that to happen, which is the reason why they've changed themselves from a peasant agrarian communist society to literally, if you want to look at it correctly, they are a card-carrying fascist Nazi society. They're a national
which we do business with on a regular basis. So
we did business with Nazi Germany, and Nazi Germany's biggest customer up to 1941 was the Soviet Union. And one of the reasons why Stalin said Hitler will never attack me is not only do I have a treaty with him, but it would cost him economically because we're his biggest customer and he buys most of his oil from us. And that didn't stop the Wehrmacht from moving across the border in 1941 at all. You have to, again, look at the warlords in Beijing. And I do want to emphasize the warlords in Beijing, the People's Liberation Army, the guys who own and control most of the industries that are making this money here in the United States with these cheap consumer goods.
Well, they also have some companies they own right here in the United States, don't they?
Yes, absolutely. Over 2,000 of them. The kick to this is that a good portion of the profits from all of these exports that they're making to us, shoes, toys, whatever, are being funneled into the People's Liberation Army to buy tanks, missiles, and advanced military technology, warships, nuclear submarines, etc. They're building their war machine with the profits from the West.
So what I think will happen, Charles, this is just my speculation, that there won't be major wars between the superpowers. What there will be is this globalist strategy, this agenda, to want to just tie in all of us under these major one world government attacks. And I think, quite honestly, what they want to do is they want to do it in a very profitable way for all of them. So I see people in China. I see some of the people in the United States who have this globalist agenda. I see people in Europe. I think what they want is they want an umbrella over the entire planet. And I really think this, the saber rattling of, you know, we're going to do this and we're going to do that. I don't think I really don't believe they're going to attack each other. I think they just want to control everybody as a group.
Well, once again, the understanding here of the Chinese hierarchy of the Chinese system, the CCP itself, in order to remain in power, in other words, oppress their people in a one-party totalitarian state, they have to turn their eyes outward. Thus, this, we must return to the motherland, what is ours, what was torn asunder by these evil invading foreigners. If you look at it correctly, from the historical viewpoint, if we return to the motherland, everything that was torn asunder, we'll have to draw the border line through downtown Warsaw. The Chinese have made it very clear with their military expansion and with their military capability that we are their number one opponent and their number one target. You know, posturing is one thing. Intentions change on a daily basis. But going by the old Cold War formula, capabilities is what you draw your conclusions from. Capabilities are a straight line. China is pushing itself into that superpower status. They are already engaged in an arms race. Even though we may not be running, they are certainly building up their armed forces for a future conflict. And to emphasize this, once again, the number two commander in the Chinese army, General Zhang Gangkai, made it very clear that if we get in their way over Taiwan, they'll vaporize Los Angeles, and they have the capability. Now, what kills me about this is that if any American general had ever made a similar statement about China, they certainly would have fired the guy instantly. General Zhang was promoted after he made that statement.
Now, of course, if they vaporize Los Angeles, what do you think we're going to do to Beijing?
Well, the smart thing to do probably wouldn't be to vaporize it. If you want to win, you don't attack their people, because with 1.4 billion, we're going to have to expend an awful lot to cause enough damage to make it worth our while, and we'll be breathing the radioactive remains for the rest of our lives.
So what are you saying? We take the Los Angeles hit and do what?
And put a tomahawk right down the throat of Hu Jintao and his leadership. Again, the key element to a dictatorship, to a totalitarian regime, is the narrow foundation of their leadership. We found that out, and we find this out every time that we fight one. Have you ever wondered why the Israelis do so well, even when they're outnumbered 10, 20 to 1? It's because they were fighting against dictatorships and totalitarian regimes. Even in China, we have this same theme play out again and again. If you're a Chinese warlord or a general, you're a power player. And those who are in party power don't necessarily want to see you suddenly stage an election. So in many cases, they don't let you train your troops. They don't let you work in an inner arms environment. We here in the West, and the Israelis work by the same pattern, work by a whole different ball game. And we found this out when we fought the first Gulf War. And we found it out again when we went through the second Gulf War. Having all these wonderful weapon systems, it looks really good on paper. But the fact is, if you don't train these guys, if you don't work them in an inner arms environment on a 24/7 basis, they're no good. They become a bunch of targets. They're a bunch of guys driving tanks, okay? We, on the other hand, have our Air Force, our Army, our Marines, our Navy constantly exercising, constantly working together, constantly honing their capabilities. And that makes all the difference. And it's because we don't expect our military to suddenly stand up and say, okay, we're staging a coup today, we take over. Saddam Hussein, Kim Jong-il, even Hu Jintao limits the amount of interoperability, the inner arms training environment, because he's afraid that once the generals get together and they see how well their stuff is going, they'll stage an election.
Well, and, let me go ahead.
Well, the Air Force commander of the Pacific region recently stated quite clearly that even though the Chinese have well over 4,000 combat aircraft, they probably wouldn't be able to deal with us with the forces that we have in region, which is only a fraction of our power, simply because they have to retain such tight control of their pilots. They don't allow them to train very well, and they're commanded specifically, you go here, you do X, and you return. And if we see you doing anything else, when you get back, we're going to shoot you. We don't do that. We encourage our guys to think independently, to work independently, make decisions independently. And that is just one clear example. Without that kind of training, you become a sitting duck.
How would you do this Tomahawk scalpel if you have to do it?
China may very well be a very large country, but there are specific key targets, key leadership people that essentially should have the proverbial silver bullet with their name on it. Wherever they go, we follow. And you make it very clear. Now, you know, the Chinese have published this. I have this up on my own website, a document from the OCMC, the Office of the Central Military Command, that they're confident they could win the nuclear war with the United States. They made that very clear, and this is a statement directed at the United States. Well, the key to that, to solving that problem, is to make Hu Jintao and the leadership, Wen and the rest of them, understand, you start something, we're not going to vaporize your people and leave you hanging around to jump around about it. We're going to come after you personally. You, your family, your pets, your green grass, your front yard, your Cherokee out in the front. You personally, and the same thing with many of their military hierarchy. If you stand up, you're going to find a predator flying overhead. And one of the things I think is probably a very good example of what I'm talking about, I was at an air show once. We had a B-2, one of the stealth bombers, sitting on the tarmac, and a number of Chinese officials were walking around it, military officials, walking around it, taking pictures, discussing things, looking at specific areas on it. And I walked up to the pilot, and I said, doesn't that make you uncomfortable that the military attaché and his cadre are here photographing your plane? And he just looked at me and smiled, and he says, yeah, it's the only time they'll ever see it.
Yeah, it may be.
So, you know, we have some things in our arsenal that the Chinese are extremely scared of. And the very first thing that we have, and we've displayed this when we went after Saddam Hussein, after Al-Qaeda targets, our RPVs, our stealth aircraft, if the leadership stands up, if they start to communicate, suddenly they're going to get shut down. Bad. Iron on target. And something like that especially deters a dictatorship from thinking that they can step out and start something and win. Where we've gotten a conflict with the Chinese is when both of us have made miscalculations on the other side. The first Korean War is a perfect example. We felt that if the Chinese intervened, that it would be an easy victory, that they were a peasant army, they weren't experienced, they didn't have sophisticated weapons. We found out that they were expert night and winter fighters. that they had excellent artillery and support communications. They were flying the most advanced aircraft in the world at the time, the MiG-15, in large numbers. It came as a shocking surprise that these guys were good and that they could kick our butt. The same thing goes with the Chinese. They thought it would be an easy victory. They'd walk right over top of the UN forces and go all the way to the end of the peninsula. And they suddenly found out that air power makes a big difference. If your troops can't move during daylight, you're in a world of hurt. And
well, stay with us. Stay with us. We'll be back with you in just a moment, Charles Smith, on Coast to Coast AM. George Norrie. Indeed, and we're going to open up the phone lines at the top of the hour with our guest Charles R. Smith, but when we come right back, more questions about North Korea. Also, we're going to talk about Iran as well, right here on Coast to Coast AM. It seems to me, Charles, that also the Iranians are the easier target than the North Koreans right now. So what's going to happen there? And will North Korea, if they see something happen to Iran, will they maybe go more on the offensive?
Well, keep in mind, there are North Koreans in Iran, even as we speak. North Korean engineers are working with the Iranian military on their version of the Nodong. That's called the Shahab 3. They are being hardly assisted by Chinese engineers who have helped the Iranians modify the Nodong to be nuclear capable. They have a modified third stage system installed. It's quite effective. It extended the range and extended the accuracy of this system to the point, simply having a nuclear bomb on top of a missile is nice, but if it detonates at the wrong altitude or if it misses by 20 miles, it's no good. In the case of the Shahab with the North Korean and Chinese assistance, the missile is now very accurate, probably can land within about a half mile of the intended target area, and certainly could carry a nuclear warhead to detonate at the appropriate and proper altitude to be effective. The Israelis are quite concerned, but they are also confident that their Arrow missile defense should be able to deal with this problem. The Iranians, of course, are funding all of this with their oil money. The Iranians and the North Koreans are currently working on a ship-based missile system that has already been tested. The Iranians and the North Koreans are also working on the RAD, which is a long-range cruise missile capable of carrying a nuclear or chemical or biological warhead. They have tested that as well. So keep in mind, we have a fairly intricate relationship already between North Korea and Iran. Iran may sound like a doable from the military standpoint, because obviously we have forces on two borders, the Afghan and the Iraqi border, but the Iranians also have problems of their own. That is with internal dissent, and an attack by the United States would quell that internal dissent, whereas if we stand quietly by the side and utilize the Iraqi Shiite population to sift back in across the border and say, you know, democracy over here isn't all that bad. I mean, there are people throwing bombs every now and then, but I can determine my own course and own living right down at my local level. Maybe you should think of the same thing. The Iranian leadership, and just to, as an example, to show you their instability, they were making really good money off their local population by selling illegally, of course, satellite TV systems. There were several members of the inner hierarchy of the Islamic Republic who were making money hand over fist simply by distributing satellite television systems. Well, all of these satellite dishes were popping up all over the place in downtown Tehran. The Ayatollahs got very upset at this because these guys were watching CNN, you know, watching the Bulls games, watching PBS and all the rest of it, and therefore said, look, we don't like that. So they ordered them to take it down, all of it, or face severe punishment. Well, the satellite dishes have gone away. The result of that, though, has been we've seen several riots. We've seen dissent. There are a number of people in Iran. Keep in mind, the vast majority of their population was not alive in 1980 during the hostage situation. They are now younger. They are looking more towards the West, and they would certainly like to have more freedom and less Ayatollahs. So Iran probably has a much better potential for our most dangerous weapon in the West, and I'm not talking about MX, I'm talking about MTV, to do its work. We didn't win the Cold War solely by standing on one side with nuclear weapons and making sure that our army was positioned in West Germany at the Fulda Gap to stop the 50,000 Russian tanks. We won the Cold War by the freedom of information and our free flow of information. Dictatorships do not like that. They cannot withstand it, and it is an inevitable result of our century that information flowing faster and faster, that it's seeping in.
All right, Charles, if you had to make a guess, do you think that there will be some kind of armed conflict with the Iranians or with the North Koreans?
North Koreans, there's a likelihood. The Iranians, what? Not so much. Their belligerent attitude and a lot of their bluster is essentially just that. What I worry about is they have been working, you know, with certain terrorist groups, Hezbollah, Hamas, and others, and may very well supply them with weapons that can be extremely devastating, and that would bring them in direct conflict with the Israelis. The Israelis could very well get themselves tangled up with the Iranians, especially over nuclear weapons development. Us, not so much, because we're, again, kind of standing off to the side and working with the European Union in the hopes of trying to dangle this other carrot in front of the Iranians, that on freeing up their trade, freeing up their political and other contacts. The North Koreans are a much more closed society. A very good example is if you buy a radio in North Korea, it's hardwired to specific channels. You don't get any choices, okay?
you get what they give you.
Right. They're not going to be listening to George Norrie, no matter how much you would like to have a great audience there. About the only people who are going to be listening in would be Kim and his inner cadre. Okay, everybody else.
And he probably does. He's probably listening to the show right now.
Very likely. You know, the point being, we're looking at more of a classic Asian empirical state with a single total ruler. Kim is more like a grandiose dictator slash king emperor. The Ayatollahs in Iran have a, at least an Islamic Republic that they have to deal with. They have a form of representative democracy that is troublesome to them. And if you'll note, like last year, they had to suspend the legislature a couple of times. That didn't go over very well. So they have a lot more problems, and they have a lot freer state from the point of view of satellite TV and radio and reception, that free flow of information. Kim has got a closed society, and that's been a problem for us with intelligence. One of the ways that we had to find out about their nuclear weapons development was from defectors, not from satellite data.
Is there anyone there, Charles, in North Korea who would support us to try to get Kim out?
Oh, yeah.
Anybody from within?
Absolutely. When I was interviewing the North Korean defector, he runs a group of high-ranking former officials who defected to Russia, to South Korea, to Japan, even to China. And these guys believe quite firmly that if they could depose Kim, the North Korean military would probably set up a junta which they could work with and essentially redirect North Korea back into the mainstream of civil populations.
With Kim out of the way, would you see a reunification of the North and the South under a specialized form of government?
It's more likely to be much like West Germany and East Germany, because North Korea is such a basket case economically. A centralized government with their representatives at the top would be almost disastrous. They're not going to have it that way. In order to obtain the appropriate aid and money, like I said, it's more like West Germany and East Germany. You know, East Germany was in terrible shape, and the West Germans have actually had to come forward and show them how do you work a modern society, almost from scratch in some cases.
The problem is, I don't think the Chinese would sit idly by and stand idly by while some kind of coup was underway.
There is a good possibility of Chinese intervention.
Yes.
And that intervention would probably be to support Kim, much like they supported Kim's father. Losing that case, like say if a junta was starting to form and it was very clear they wouldn't be able to do it, then they'd probably just go ahead and walk across the border and try to take over directly. You know, the problem with Beijing in this sphere has been that they're extremely concerned that losing their client states will eventually mean that they, too, will have to face the future and fall. Beijing has got a big problem on their hands, and they've, in many cases, made this problem and compounded the issue by proliferating nuclear weapons to their client states.
What do you see, then, is our biggest problem as a nation in terms of where we're going to be headed in the next few years, trying to battle things? And we're not going to do this alone, are we? Are we going to get some help?
Oh, absolutely. But it's going to have its own limitations, and that's based on historical evidence. You know, as I told you before, we fabricated this wonderful CIA report that said North Korea isn't going to have a long-range missile, and then suddenly one flies over Tokyo and lands off the coast of Alaska, literally within months of that report. Japan didn't really take that too lightly. They fully understand that we had the data that said otherwise, but didn't share it with them. So the Japanese said, the heck with asking Washington for accurate intelligence information. We're going to get our own. They've ordered their own satellites that are monitoring North Korea and China. expect the Japanese to eventually get rid of the restrictions on their constitution about their military. It's quite likely that they may go nuclear, depending on what Kim does in the next few weeks. They really don't have a lot of alternatives, especially when they're looking at 300 and 400 weapon systems in the hands of the Chinese, who are getting more belligerent.
This is happening fast, then, isn't it?
Somewhere between, if you look at the absolute numbers, and specifically I'm looking at China, when we talk about capabilities, after 2008, the window of opportunity for Beijing opens again, unless there is some radical change in our systems and deployment. And I'm talking about absolute numbers of aircraft, warships, landing craft, specifically, numbers of missiles. Their plan, and I've talked about this before on the show and been talking about it for years, is to deploy 1,000 ballistic missiles. There is a realization slowly coming to fruition here in Washington and in the Pentagon that our future adversary is going to be China. They are growing and building, and we have to reorient our strengths to deal with it. Otherwise, we're going to be in a real world of hurt. And, you know, like these base closings, for example, the recent decision to close the submarine base at Groton, Connecticut, is a reflection. Granted, you know, Groton is not going to like that idea, but the Navy is redeploying 9 nuclear-powered attack submarines to Guam. That should give you an indication of where we're looking. The same thing like with the Middle East. Instead of having 5 battle groups hanging around the Persian Gulf, we now have the capability, and we have deployed a nuclear air-powered aircraft carrier battle group to Hawaii. This is the first time since World War II that we now have a battle group based in Hawaii. So this is a reorientation in reflection to a growing military threat.
To say nothing of where our submarines are.
Well, that's a fairly good idea. You know, obviously, if you're going to try to cross 100 miles of open water, you certainly wouldn't want American attack submarines hanging around waiting to sink you. And there's nothing more difficult in the world to find than an American Los Angeles class or Seawolf class submarine. They are the premier number one systems.
Well,
and
no
armed with
that.
Tomahawk cruise missiles, you might not see it coming even if you're on land.
I still think that our submarines are the reason why the balance is in our favor, and why there has been this incredible checks and balances system. Those submarines can launch within 3 minutes right off the coasts, and those countries are annihilated.
Well, keep in mind, one of the things that we also did recently was we've taken one of our Trident missile submarines from the Atlantic and moved it to the Pacific. And the reason why this is important is it is armed with the new Trident D5. These warheads are maneuverable and extremely accurate. We've also taken the former Trident submarines that were being stood down due to the salt limitations. They are like the Ohio, for example, and the Georgia. They're being refitted. The Trident missiles are being pulled from them. And for each Trident missile, we are now replacing it with 5 conventional Tomahawk cruise missiles. Essentially, what you would be looking at here is a submarine with well over 120 cruise missiles, all capable of being launched within the span of very short few minutes, seconds, that could be lingering only miles off their coast. And by the time you realize that it's happened, it's way too late.
If you were a group within these countries that are going to get tough with Korea, what would you be talking about right now, and how would you approach it?
The number one thing I would be talking about would be missile defense. And that would be based on our Aegis missile systems. The Lake Erie, for example, is at Kwajalein doing the test with the SM-3s. We've already purchased the first batches of these new anti-missile missiles. If we make the dictators of these nations feel that they cannot succeed in combat by numbers or by sheer force with their missiles, then they'll realize they've wasted that investment, and they're going to have to go back from scratch. It's going to put them back years. And they're not going to build their own missile defense except for a limited defense for their own leadership. They're going to be looking at our systems and wondering, will they be able to deal with them, as well as can they potentially put their systems on target? And if we put enough question in there, then they're going to stand back and go, not this week, not this month, not this year. But we got to make this clear, because it's only when it's not clear that's when we get into a scrap. The EP3 incident, the Korean War, even in Vietnam, it was when we miscalculated on both sides that these things begin to get out of hand, and it gets extremely dangerous for all of us.
And we seem to have done a lot of that, those miscalculations.
Miscalculations are dangerous. And the first thing that we shouldn't miscalculate here is that Kim Jong-il, his strings are in Beijing. And if you want to pull him, you got to reach over to Beijing. And you and I, even as consumers, can help with that one simply by saying, I'm not going to buy Chinese this week or this month. It's difficult, but sometimes, you know, I can tell you there are certain countries in the world like India and Brazil that are actually enjoying dealing with Walmart these days, because not only are they undercutting the competition, they also know that they're getting a little bit of favorable attitude, because we know the money isn't being plowed back into their militaries.
Stay with us, Charles. We're going to open up the phone lines next. We'll give you an opportunity to chat with the cyber war expert, Charles R. Smith. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.
To access the audio archives of Coast to Coast AM, log on to coasttocoastam.com.
We'll find you the answers when you don't understand.